This podcast is dedicated to those that are in the mix, making it happen, and want to do better. Better at everything. Each episode, our guest will help us be better, do better, and perform better. We will tackle topics that we all deal with in business and in life.
So we've been having a lot of rain this early spring in North Georgia, and my backyard would usually kind of almost flood. And, you know, one of my neighbors goes, "Chris, you know, I got a guy that can help you with it." And it just reminded me, you know, how important it is to be the one that people come to and you need expert advice and you need someone to take care of something that you're just not that familiar with. But today we're going to hear from my guy that I go to, I've been going to for years, BHIOT. If you're not familiar with BHIOT, one of our exclusive technology suppliers / advisors, providing IoT assessments and doing on-site visits with all sizes of customers around the globe to determine what they need from an IoT perspective and where the gaps are and what kind of technology they should be deploying. So sit back, relax. You're going to really enjoy this. Be prepared for some notes and check the show notes, speaking of notes, and I'll have more information on how to get a hold of BHIOT and one of their principals we're going to hear from right now. Welcome to another episode of The Wireless Way. I'm your host, Chris Whitaker, and today I'm just really excited to have a world-class athlete, a world-class businessman and technologist and futurist. Steve Broomer is joining us today, and he brings with him over 30 years in the wireless and mobile space and 27 plus. I always like when people put plus on there because you never know. Is that, like 28, 29? So 27 plus years experience in the machine to machine. You know, that definitely dates that, right?
That's not even right.
Yeah. Our AKA the IoT industry that we know today. His unique knowledge of the IoT ecosystem, channel development, sales, marketing, product development, go-to-market, and executive strategy allows him to provide industry-leading consulting services, and that's what we're going to talk a lot about today, to his clients around the world. He's demonstrated history of working with Fortune 100 companies, wireless carriers, distributors, software and platform providers, hardware manufacturers, service providers, and numerous channel partners, to include Telarus, focused on commercialization and monetization, very important there in the IoT industry. And as an IoT leader, you can imagine he's invited to speak at numerous trade shows, events, world-class podcast shows like The Wireless Way, and webinars that allow him to provide insights and market support to all of his clients. So when he's not talking wireless, you'll find him on the basketball court playing basketball conveniently. You know, so much so he's been inducted into the Masters Basketball Association Hall of Fame. And without further ado, let me take a breath. Welcome, Steve, to the show, man. How are you?
Not bad for an old man.
Not bad for an old man. My rear, man. Oh, my gosh. It literally is every episode I say this, and my people that listen regularly are like, okay, let me guess. You learn something new every time, and I do, which is why I love these conversations. And man, so yeah, we got your bio out of the way,
do we have any time left?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's just one of the byproducts, right, of being around 27, 30 years. You've done a lot of stuff, which great. Is why you're in a great role as consulting and sharing all that knowledge, because you've acquired all this knowledge over the years. You might as well do something with it, right?
No kidding. Exactly. Get it out as fast as possible.
That's right. Well, and you're doing a great job at it. And I know I'm glad to partner with you. And I met you several years ago at a different role, and just always enjoyed our interactions and your knowledge. So on that note, had a little fun with that. But serious note, I mean, tell me a little bit more about your journey. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I've been in technology since I was a kid. My father and I had a computer distribution business and a communications distribution business. So I started out in wireline communications and computer products. And one thing led to another, and we were fortunate enough to get into the very beginning of the old modems. So like a Hayes modem and all these other ones way back in the early 80s. And as we went through the 80s selling wired line products, I got the fortunate visit to Bell Labs in New Jersey, where they started to talk to me about wireless data. And this is like 85, 86. And then I submitted $2,000 of my hard-earned money that my wife was loaning. You're doing what with $2,000 back in 1987? And I applied to get Spectrum at the time. It wasn't billions of dollars back then. It was $75 or, you know, less than that in certain cases. And I was fortunate enough to get 120 channels of 900 megahertz SMR licenses. And I started in the two-way radio business in 87 and then sold the, after we tried to do wireless data over 900 megahertz in 1990, the beginnings of Nextel and the beginnings of RAM Mobile Data purchased my licenses. And so I jumped into the wireless data business in the early 90s and started to do machine to machine with Coca-Cola in Atlanta, where you are. And we did the first Coca-Cola machine in 1992-3 with monster modems and monster antennas and monster sensors. And that was the start of me being in the machine to machine business. So that's how I got started in this crazy business that many years ago.
Wow. Well, by chance, do you know Hilton Nicholson with Cyber Reef?
No, never heard.
I need to introduce you guys. He was in the early days in the 80s, I guess, as well with AT&T, and was on a project where they, he says he kind of helped create some of the first, you know, routers and cellular routers. I don't know if it's quite a modem or not, but anyway, great story out to connect you to.
That'd be great.
In fact, this is a plug. We did an interview, coincidentally, go figure. I did an interview with him a few weeks ago. So on the wireless way, Cyber Reef CEO, Hilton Nicholson, great conversation. He's, I would say, kind of cut from the same cloth, my friend. So, interesting.
Well, you know, when you get to this age of your career, you're looking for older guys that actually have done some stuff like that. So,
that's what I'm saying. You guys would really have a great conversation.
It's the younger guys, Chris, that I have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
So. Unless it's basketball. Unless we're talking basketball, then you can hang, right?
Most of the time.
So, you know, I can only imagine, you know, in your role, in your travels, I know you're a road warrior. You know, when you're traveling around and people ask you about, you know, where's the financial opportunity? Where is an IoT? You know, what do you tell them?
Well, today has never been a better time to be in IoT. I mean, the amount of, you can get anything. You can find anything. You can make anything work in the IoT space today. There are no shortage of products. Again, in large volumes, yes, there's a supply chain issue, but I'm saying if you need a sensor, if you need a product, if you need a modem, if you need antennas, if you need software platforms, hardware, anything that you need, you can get today. So that's not bad, you know, to be able to have end-to-end solutions available on the street. And in that ecosystem, you can make money along every avenue that you are down for a particular customer, whether it's making hardware margins, software margins, airtime margins, margins on data analytics. All of those areas have profit dollars associated with it. There's monthly recurring revenue that continues, because one great thing about our industry today, Chris, is that these sensors and these products on the edge have
battery life that now goes, you know, 7 years, 10 years. So just imagine that that is a recurring revenue monster for you for the next, you know, 5 years. We never really have had that unless you were in IT and you were selling some kind of MSP type of program. So the money is there to be made along the way. And as I have told you and the people that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be at the academy with you, the hardest thing is finding the ability to integrate it all. You know, being that one-stop shop that allows customers to trust that you're going to be able to provide every aspect of the integrated solution that the customer needs to solve a problem. And that is where the education comes in. That's where the knowledge and the relationship building comes in. That's the why you need a Telarus in the middle of it to help you find the right vendor partners that can help you solve customers' problems and make money.
Well said. you know, I read an article, it may be a couple of years ago now, is when I was really first leaning in and seeing the opportunity here myself. It says something to the effect of like 65% of IoT projects fail to make it to market. And the article went on to say, you know, largely because, you know, especially in the years past, you may have upwards of 7 or 8 different suppliers involved in one particular solution. And you kind of hit on, you know, having someone to kind of bundle together and productize a solution as opposed to components of a solution. I mean, do you find that less projects are failing? Has the industry matured enough? I mean, I know you're involved in a lot of these, you know, type of IoT projects. And another guy put it really well, and I'll let you answer in a minute. But he said, there's sound two types of IoT projects. You either build it or you buy it. It seems like, you know, the better deal is to buy one, just, you know, off the shelf or quasi off the shelf. There's always some customization, but building it seems to really have some problems. Talk to us about building an IoT solution. Is that any better now than it was, say, 5-10 years ago?
Well, there's definitely better tools available for you to be able to do that. You know, the SDKs, the API integration tools that are usually provided free, allow you, if you have the skill, to be able to put it all together yourself. Those are usually happening on the larger enterprise side. But as we look to try to attack the SMB side, that's where the buy opportunity comes in. There are many companies right now that have taken the pain out of the development phase, and actually you can buy it. Now, I'm not a proponent of in a box, you know, buying IoT in a box. There are companies that have tried that, and it has not sold what we would consider boatloads of boxes, but it has proven that you can buy, you know, column A, column B, column C, column D of products and software and integrated service opportunities all in a pretty simple way. So I think that's changed. I think that whole model is changing, where the average agent or VAR can actually find all of the components needed to successfully deploy to their customer without having to build and develop and, you know, buy software and, you know, everything else that's there. So I think that's there. That's today. It's a lot easier than ever before. But to address the survey that was done by Cisco. Now, this is going back probably, that survey is probably 5 years old, where, you know, majority of the IoT projects were not necessarily failing, but not converting to fully deployed programs. There were three main reasons that that was happening. One is that the systems integrator or VAR, or even the internal IT departments that were trying these IoT programs out, didn't set the proper expectations, meaning that they were doing these not necessarily with a problem to solve. And so they were doing them because the president said, hey, listen, have you ever heard of this IoT stuff? You know, maybe we should try it. And they were like, okay, well, we'll try it without a problem to solve. So the expectations were one of the issues. The second was the idea that the people that were doing a lot of these trials did not have enough experience at all of the ecosystem partners and players that were required to successfully deploy it. And so they were trying to band-aid a bigger issue without learning what to do prior to this. And then the third thing was the cost expectations. They didn't really think about all of the pieces of it and where the cost structures were. You know, what did you need? What was a recurring revenue model? What was the operational needs that you had in the ongoing cost structure? So, you know, those are the main three reasons why the numbers were so high back then. Today is not, I got to believe that if Cisco went out and did that survey today, it wouldn't be anywhere close to that high.
Interesting. That is interesting. So you're one half of BHIOT, right? Is that correct? Or are you more like two-thirds? Like
no, two-thirds. It is half and half.
So let's talk about Thalibus. Pivot a little bit to BHIOT and you guys are a kind of a very unique supplier for Telarus because you really don't have a product per se.
What, you don't think my knowledge is a product? Oh my god!
It's beyond that. And that's an insult calling that a product. It's a high value commodity. I mean, so what does that? Yeah, let's talk about that. So if you're listening and you are a Telarus partner, you're lucky. You have access to BHIOT and Steve and John and all this information we're talking about. But if, you know, if you're not a partner and you want to be, obviously we'd love to have you. You can contact us and we can talk about that. But, you know, as we, when we first started this conversation, I said, you know, this is kind of unique. It's a little different than our run of the mill kind of supplier. When a partner has an IoT type opportunity in front of them and they've never done this before, which is largely the case here, what can they expect from you? And maybe, you know, just kind of when would they, what does the ideal opportunity look like? And what can a partner expect from an engagement? And again, this is like a consulting for a higher kind of solution in a sense. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. It's not necessarily, I'm not a real big proponent of the word consulting. So I'm going to say that it's more of utilizing my relationships and our knowledge to, as a agent or a partner of Telarus, when you have an IoT opportunity, and it, like right now, there's a hospital that we're working with you guys on. You know, it's a major deal, but the Telarus group that's there inside there has great account control, been selling them other products and services in the past, and then of course, as the customer should do, learn that they have IoT. And so I don't want you to necessarily be complete experts at it, but bring me in, bring our company in, and we will help you close the deal. We will help you solve the problem. We will help you figure out who the right vendors are to bring and teach you and educate you so that you can rinse and repeat this model over and over again using Telarus. And so we look at ourselves as a strategy development execution focused firm helping you make the big bucks in actually selling and integrating IoT into customers that you already have.
And from a vertical perspective, I mean, it's not
don't
like
care.
Doesn't care.
Don't care. Don't care. Don't, if it asset tracking to vehicle tracking to hospitals to manufacturing facilities, it doesn't
connected
matter.
Communities.
Yep. It doesn't matter. Yep. Smart buildings, smart cities, smart communities. And again, it doesn't matter what type of technology. It could be private 5G. It could be 5G. It could be cellular. It could be LoRaWAN on the private side. It doesn't really matter. We'll figure out what the best solution is to solve the customer's problem. You don't have to necessarily get in the middle of it, but I'm going to educate you so that you don't so you can do this stuff on your own. I anticipate that there's going to be a lot of situations where, you know, I'm in with one of your partners one time, and I've educated them too much and they don't need me anymore. But that's okay, you know, because at my stage of the career, I want more and more people selling IoT, and I want this thing to continue to explode at a rapid pace.
Well, and two, I predict they'll engage with you, and then they'll come around to another use case, another vertical that they're not as comfortable with, and, you know, maybe you have to come back to the well for some more.
There you go. That would be wonderful.
So is it, you know, fair? Well, let me back up a minute. When we first started talking, you know, it became clear to me after being in this role for a year, you know, the suppliers know their solutions really well. And, you know, they got their swim lane. And then let's just say, you know, a partner attended one of our mobility IoT academies and they go, hey, I think I know enough to be dangerous, but I don't know enough to really run a deal. Mm-hmm. And then you got the end user that goes, you know what, after talking to, you know, partner X here, yeah, I think I could benefit from this, but I don't know what I don't know. You know, so you got three different entities kind of at different levels of knowledge. And that's what I love about this relationship. You kind of come over the top and you bring all three together and, you know, you do an assessment. Mm-hmm. What do those assessments look like? And, you know, and is the output like a nice document, you know, kind of outlining? I mean, you actually, is there a document called an assessment you give them, or is it more of just a working fluid relationship where you kind of just guide the conversations?
Is there a D, all the above? Because that's really what
that's a good answer. I'll take it.
Yeah, that's the plan. The plan is to listen to the customer, understand what the partner's capabilities are or not, understand what the pain points are for the customer and what is going to be the easiest way for us to deploy a solution utilizing the partner at the customer's location for, you know, for a long-term IoT solution and integration play. We do assess the customer's needs and try and put together what we believe are going to be industry-leading solutions and products and options as far as coverage is concerned and carrier scenarios, and also then handhold them through what we believe are the right solution partners and providers to utilize and solve the problem of the customer. So it's more than just an assessment on the opportunity. It's more of, hey, I want to figure out the best way for you guys to make money in selling the solution with its Alaris partner program. So it's almost like a playbook that we put together and say, here's who we think you should use. Here's how you should go about doing it. Here's how you make money. And so handholding that partner through that program. I'm trying not to put a time limit on this, but I'm not going to sit there and handhold these guys for 6 months for a solution that they're trying to do. They're going to have to dedicate their time and energy and effort to be able to understand a little bit more about what the customer wants and learn.
No, I agree with you. That, I mean, time is money, and sell cycles, you know, I think everyone, yeah, both partners and end users benefits from a shorter sales cycle. I mean, hey, if there's a need, let's identify it. Let's identify what the outcome should be. Let's choose the right solution and let's deploy it. I mean, let's quit talking about it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And the other thing is that sometimes customers want to see someone from the industry with 30 years experience come in with a partner, because they respect the partner knowing that there's someone out there that can help them bring something to market quicker and faster and cost effective. So, you know, so they're always looking at ways. I want to help them. I'm not there to hurt them. I'm there to make them shine, but at the same time, avoid mistakes, avoid more delays in the sales cycle, as well as the implementation cycle. Because, you know, as you know, Chris, having done this for a long time, sometimes these sales cycles just stink. They're just too freaking long.
That's right.
Or the deployment time is too long because someone forgot something or someone picked the wrong partner or whatever.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I could think back to one very costly deployment where they sped through the proof of concept and missed some, you know, pretty major technical capability kind of issues, and after deploying like almost 2,000 devices, realized, hey, this ain't gonna work. it's not compatible with our other systems and had to yank them all back. I mean, huge cost. I mean, that it drowned the deal.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
You remember that there, you got to ask the right questions. I mean, this is the one crazy thing about IoT is it's just not in the IT department, right? It involves operations. It involves, trucks and the logistics groups within companies. It could, manufacturing groups, smart cities is even worse. The assessment that we do within a smart city, sometimes it's like a 2-day workshop. We sell a 2-day workshop for smart cities where we're getting every one of the stakeholders together. Talk about diversified needs. I got snowplow guys, I got water meters and electric utilities and traffic and digital signage and EV. Think about getting all those people together and then trying to figure out how the hell you're going to deploy that. So those are things that we help people with because it's just painful to go through that process.
Absolutely. That was a good dovetail until I was going to ask you. I mean, I can, imagine, most of our partners sell technology and it often starts with the CTO or the director of IT. And we talk about in the academies how, as you said, this is a business conversation around solving business problems. And oftentimes you start more at the department head level or the C level. Has there ever been a time where you engaged and said, hey, maybe you're not ready for this. Maybe, the ROI is not there. Does that happen where it's like you're chasing a shiny object or you're trying to force a solution? At some point, you have to just kind of go, maybe this isn't the right solution.
Well, there is a fine balance line between internal politics and emotional commitment, meaning that you have customers, enterprises or end users, where they've been given an objective to go get. And that is, I want to track my assets or I want to do something, and it's usually pushed down to people that don't see the light or don't understand it. And there are times where I sit in a meeting and go, listen, you guys aren't ready for this. Just keep doing it the way you're doing it and just call me in a couple of years and usually it takes a new regime of people that are more adaptive to change within the technology. Even on the agent side of life from a channel partner, they come into a customer that they've been selling telecom gear to. And all of a sudden the customer goes, listen, I'm looking at this IoT stuff and can you help me? And they said, oh, hell yeah, it can't be that hard to do. And they get into a situation where they overpromise, they don't know enough, and they fall flat on their face. And then I have to come in there and tell them, listen, guys, if you don't dedicate one or two people on your team to understand and learn IoT and understand and learn all the different parts of the ecosystem that are required to solve this customer's problem, then you might as well not do this because you're going to look like crap. People are not going to respect you. Your customer is going to get mad at you. It's just a bad spiral to be on. So, yes, there's a lot of times where we are the bad cop. It's just the best way to look at it. And we are the ones that are having to tell these people, hey, listen, don't do this. This is ridiculous. It's not going to work out. And repairing the damage is going to be more costly than figuring it out in the beginning.
Yeah, that reminds me of that other sales cliche, win fast, lose fast. If it's not meant to be, let's not spend work cycles on this to have a slow loss.
Right. Or start out smaller than you were doing. I mean, there's a lot of times where these guys come up with these grandiose programs to implement. And this crap's going to take a long time to do, Chris. And we just said, no. Why don't you just stop boiling the ocean? Just do a little tiny project to prove your capabilities. Some people, we like the guys like an AWS IoT or an Azure IoT as a platform because it's used so often and you can integrate very easily multiple solutions and multiple vertical programs through a platform like that. Well, if you don't have the internal experience at it, then why the hell would you even go down that road?
That's right. That makes sense too. Speaking of going down the road too, I mean, I'd like to get your opinion real quick on ROI. I get asked a lot about that and I'm like, well, the problem with trying to explain to somebody, there's, you know, a thousand different ways to calculate it based off the use case and the vertical. But generally I say, look, you take the cost of doing it today and you should track that the benefit of an automated or an IoT solution, saving them money. And, you know, that's kind of your loose and fast ROI. But is an ROI always necessary? I mean, if you're adding to the value of a business process and it making outcomes better, sometimes that's just an investment, right? I mean, what kind of ratio do you see of the properly deployed IoT solutions actually paying for themselves versus not paying for themselves, but they're making the company stronger, better, faster? So, you know, in my mind, I'm going, surely that has to at some point be an ROI there if you're stronger, better, faster, right?
Well, you got to have a management team that actually can accept that, you know, that can live by that, because if there are people that manage by numbers. And so if it doesn't prove some kind of savings or you can really show me an ROI financially, I don't want to do this. So it really depends on who you're selling this stuff to and their way of managing their business. You know, I was at a company one time and they were going, well, I know where my trucks are. I know they're going from job A to job B. I know exactly what they are. And you know, the old days in the asset tracking or GPS tracking scenario of trucks like HVAC trucks, which is as basic as you can get, you know, we'd say, okay, well, you're okay with Joe sitting in his truck in a parking lot, you know, hanging out, smoking a cigarette. You're okay with Joe stopping by the bar in the middle of the day. Well, he's not stopping in the bar in the middle of the day. I was like, oh, okay, great. Well, then why don't you just give him a tracker and see what happens? And then the big brother scenario comes in. So there's a lot of emotional stuff that come into deploying solutions that you have to go through too. And that's a political nightmare, or it's a really, really valuable ROI tool. You know, listen, time is money. I mean, especially today with the prices of fuel, you want to know where your trucks are. You want to know that they're being the most efficient on the road and they're not killing you from a, you know, extra, you know, $10,000 worth of fuel this month. So, you know, ROI comes in a lot of different flavors. It is a cash ROI that's there, but it's also emotional, you know, knowing what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, just last week I was on a call with a grocery store distribution company that services 500 different grocery stores in the Southeast. And believe it or not, their problem wasn't tracking the drivers and fuel efficiency and all that. It was about their customers calling their dispatch constantly going, hey, where's the truck? You know, I got customers lined up needing bread and eggs. And all they wanted was like a 30-minute, you know, check-in, a text going, hey, the truck's an hour out. The truck will be there in 15 minutes, you know, so they can make sure they had staff at the dock waiting for them, because literally, you know, we're seeing empty shelves, right, because of supply chain. It was all about customer experience and outcomes. So that was really interesting.
Right. And then, Chris, you know that you can deliver that solution today. Everything that customer needs to get that information is available today, pretty much off the shelf, which is the coolest part about where we are today in the industry.
Yeah, I agree. Well, coming toward the end of our time here, I mean, any last words or advice for partners? How can they learn more about BHIoT?
Well, first go to bhiotgroup.com and you can.
There you go. I knew it had to be easy.
Or just reach out to me. I'm all over LinkedIn and on Facebook, and we have our own YouTube channel. You can go see. I know there's WIT Wednesdays and all the other stuff, but we have IoT Nuggets, which you're involved in. So there's other ways to be able to get a hold of us. But I do want to say that there's two things that I keep on stressing for the Telarus family out there. And obviously I'll be out with you next week at Channel Partner Show and in your booth and talking to others. There's two things that you have a responsibility for as a Telarus agent. One is to educate yourself and do it in any way you can. While you're trying to solve customers' problems, you have to educate yourself. And number two is take on the responsibility of being the company to go to, meaning that you are the integrator. You're putting it all together for the customer. You're the one stop to shop. Everybody respects that because you have become a steward and a learner of the game of IoT and can do that for your customer. You're going to make a lot more money and you're going to have the respect of that customer long term.
Great words to end on. And I look forward to next week. And we have three more academies this year at Telarus where we're taking workshops for 2.5 days and bringing in these suppliers we've mentioned. So, and that's great. Yeah, right. Education, man. Knowledge is power. And as important as knowledge is relationships. So, I always encourage partners to, hey, you need to get to know Steve and John. Know them before you have a big deal. So, because it happens all too often where these big deals just kind of pop up and the customer wants to have a meeting next Tuesday and here it is Friday and they don't know you guys. So it's like this scramble. Either do you meet on the call with the customer, which is not best practice, or they get to know you and meet you, learn about you prior to there ever being a need. So when the need pops up, it's not a cold handoff. It's a warm relationship already in place. So, man, Steve, thanks for your time today. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Chris. I love doing these things with you, and it's so much easier when, two of us like you and I have been through so many wars together. It's just easier for these conversations and these people who are going to end up listening to the podcast to better understand what the hell we can do to help them.
That's right. That's right. I like how you said that. It reminds me of Natasha Royer-Coons. I don't know if she dubbed it, but she always said, wireless warriors unite. I feel like that's what we're doing.
I love her. She's fantastic. I've done many sessions and panels with her before. So she's another one of them.
Yeah, she's one of the OGs for sure. Well, there you go, folks. Thanks for checking out another episode of The Wireless Way. And if you like what you heard, just a big favor, I ask, like, subscribe, download, share. You can even reach out to me at Chris at thewirelessway.net if you have an idea, suggestion for a guest. Love to hear that. And thanks for checking out The Wireless Way, and we'll see you next time.